Hi there, I'm Nihal and you're listening to the Rescue Tales podcast, the show dedicated to helping you settle your adopted rescue dog. In this episode, I chat with Catherine Porter about how we can support sensitive dogs who display aggressive behaviours using positive reinforcement techniques. Catherine is the founder of Four Paws and You Dog Training. She's a pause-free, reward-based dog behaviour consultant. Now, many of her clients come to her with pit bulls, German shepherds, Rottweilers, and other powerful breeds. And her training techniques have enabled many of her clients to take shock collars and prong collars off of their dogs and reduce their dog sensitivities to other dogs. As always, I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you'd like more content like this, make sure you come and join our private Facebook group. That's facebook.com/rescuetales.co. And I'll link to that in the show notes of this episode. Hi, Catherine, and welcome to the Rescue Tales podcast.
Hi, Nihal. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, I'm super excited to be chatting with you today because we are going to be talking about a topic that I think many, many of our listeners will be very happy to hear about, particularly from your perspective in terms of the positive reinforcement approach with working with dogs that are displaying aggressive behaviors. But before we start talking about that, tell us a little bit about you, who you are, what you do, your background, and of course, who your dog or dogs are.
Sure. Yeah. So my name is Catherine Porter. I am the owner of Four Paws New Dog Training. I've been working with pet parents and their dogs for about 5 or 6 years, or maybe a little bit longer than that. I have two dogs, Jack and Bernie. Jack is actually the legacy of Four Paws and You because I became a trainer because of him, because of all of his emotional baggage, so to speak. He had a really hard time on a leash, seeing unfamiliar people, being around other dogs. So he is why I got started. And I've learned a lot about him, understanding his social and emotional needs. And yeah, so I'm sharing that with others.
That's amazing. So, and I can totally relate to that because before we started recording, I was telling you I started Rescue Tales because I adopted a dog and was like, oh my God, I'm clueless.
Yeah,
not suggesting that you're clueless though. I didn't mean to.
No, I was. When I first brought Jack home, I had no idea. I like you, had a dog growing up, and I just didn't understand the nuances and how to help him. And I hired a trainer that went against the values that I have now with my approaches. And I've learned the other side of those things. So I could see, I understand, I can relate to you and others that are struggling because I've been in those shoes before.
Yeah. And I'm actually really curious, like when you hired the trainers and before you became a trainer, you didn't know about dog training, but was it like a gut feeling that this just doesn't feel right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And I saw it wasn't working and it was actually making the problems worse. She wanted me to escalate some of the approaches in order to suppress Jack's behavior. And that was when my husband and I said, no, we're not doing this.
Okay. Okay. And then did you struggle to find someone who was using a different approach? Was that why you, and the reason I ask is because I speak, like we were talking about this before we started recording, that I speak to so many people who end up working with trainers who use aversive methods. And sometimes they see quick fixes and it's mostly because, as you were saying earlier, it's just the dog is actually just scared and trying to avoid pain, but they don't know where to turn to. And the one thing I say to people is that if you feel that it's not right, trust your gut. If you see it's not working, mm-hmm. just look and you will find. But I'm hoping the podcast will help people become more aware of people like trainers like yourself who use force-free approaches to train dogs and take a different approach and think differently about how to settle their dogs and how to support them to work through some of the emotional challenges. But tell us, Catherine, like when we talk about aggression in dogs, it just feels like it's such a big label that we use.
Yes.
what does it actually mean? Like, what is a dog feeling or going through when it's displaying what we interpret as aggressive behavior?
Well, a lot of times it's, so dogs go through those types of fear responses, right? The fight, flight, fear, or fawn around. And so dogs that are feeling those things are going to express them in behaviors outwardly. So things like ear snapping to biting are all a result of what our dogs are feeling internally. And Pavlov, I mean, he's the one that said, like, our dog's internal emotions are what are expressed outwardly in behavior. And so that is a huge piece of what I try to help pet parents understand, so that they can empathize with what the dog is experiencing in order to help them through and help them build coping skills and self-soothing abilities in those more stressful times.
Okay. And sometimes, so I was being, as I mentioned earlier, to Andrew Hale today on the podcast as well, and we were talking about how sometimes what we see as aggressive behavior is actually a result of potentially physiological problems, or the dog has got some sort of pain, or maybe help us understand more about some of the causes of aggressive behavior other than the dog is scared.
Yeah. So some things could be a dog has pain or is ill. I've worked with a few dogs that have had gastrointestinal issues for a long period of time, which then express themselves as outward expressions of snapping, being unsure about people. And it made my clients really nervous about their dog's behavior, but uncovering some of these things going on, but it does impact their dog's behavior. Even tooth pain, right? Like dogs that have noise sensitivity issues, tooth or ear pain can contribute to a dog not sleeping well, which sets the dog up to not have a good quality of a day, being able to bond socially, emotionally, maybe even being scared at night. So all of these pieces do factor into how our dogs are experiencing the world and how they show how they're comfortable or not comfortable with those experiences.
What would you advise someone who says, my dog is either with people or with other dogs, is barking, is lunging, is air snapping? Would the first port of call then be, you need to see your vet?
Yeah. And even it most likely, sometimes, like with my Jack Russell, for instance, like this was, he came from a home and I know that he was taken care of in medically. So these were just behaviors that he had a hard time with his emotions, right? But with the clients, if they can't pinpoint a certain situation or if it's all of a sudden a new behavior, then I definitely recommend a vet visit if one hasn't been done recently and to rule out pain, especially, and if there's any underlying illnesses going on too, so blood work and things like that.
Yeah. And then with your dog, sorry, I forgot his name, your Jack Russell.
Jack.
Yeah, okay.
Easy.
So with you mentioned Jack's emotions. What was happening with Jack? What do you think with the emotions that he was going through, and how was that manifesting in his behavior, and how have you helped him kind of work through some of those challenges?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of fear and frustration for Jack. Like I know when he was younger, he's almost 12, so he's a little bit more of an old man. But in his younger years, like he really enjoyed being around other dogs. Like he loved the social aspect. So being on a leash, I think there was a little bit of fear and frustration that was going on. And so I helped him by engaging with me, right? Like having him know that I'm the bearer of all good things helped him to change his mind about the scary or frustrating experiences going on around him. Seeing another dog walk by, he can now make the choice of turning and looking at me when those things happen.
I love that you use the word choice. I actually don't think we necessarily think about giving our dogs a choice, because especially with the mindset of like dominance-based approaches where it's like, I'm the boss and you are the dog, therefore you do what I tell you to. There is no choice in that. But maybe let's touch on that, because this is such a, you know, widely held belief that as a dog owner or dog parent, you should be the dominant figure and the leader of the pack. A lot of the research I've been looking at suggests that that's just total nonsense and actually doesn't work, and can in fact have a negative impact on your relationship with your dog and your dog's well-being. And you can even be putting the dog at risk sometimes by doing that. But I'd love to hear your perspective on dominance approaches, if you think they work or they don't, and why.
Such an outdated like model of thinking, right? Like I just, dogs have been domesticated because they're the friendliest to survive. And so why would we want to dominate an animal or being when they are our friends? Like it just doesn't make sense to me, right? Like it's counterintuitive to think that we have to penalize our companion animals for doing things that are natural to them. Mm. Like just like us, when we're frustrated or we're angry, we're not trying to dominate, right? Like we're having these feelings and expressing ourselves. Sometimes it's not in the best way, right? Like sometimes we're irrational in those moments. And I know dogs are not rational beings, right? But they do have those feelings to express themselves because they have those feelings. They're sentient. Mm. And so it doesn't make sense to me of why we would punish them for that. But maybe that's our culture, right? And I was thinking mm-hmm. about this, living in the United States, it's a very punitive culture. Mm-hmm. Like it's all about, oh, you did this wrong. Like now you have to face consequences. Mm-hmm. But if we switch things around and really understood where the next person was coming from, or where our dog is coming from, we would have a greater understanding of what they need. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can help them in a better way.
So on that note, what is a better way? And in particular, when, if we think about someone who has a dog, quite a large, powerful dog that has some emotional challenges and manifesting in aggressive behavior, how else can they work with their animal to support them through managing, coping with those fears? Assuming that there's nothing physiological, they've checked with their vets, there's nothing physiological that's happening. It's clearly an emotional problem that the dog is dealing with. How would you advise someone in that situation?
So we would figure out what are the main environmental stressors going on. So I'll use Jack, for instance. So yeah, I used to have a lot of them, from kids on bikes to trucks to people getting out of cars to other dogs. So understanding what each of those situations are, so I can better set him up for success, but also for me to know that these things he has a hard time with.
Yeah.
And so then I pair whatever he loves with a gradual exposure to those situations. Mm. So for him, food is a powerful reward for him, and it's a game changer because it can definitely change the way our dogs, just like us, can perceive a situation. Mm. And so when I was able to practice with him, say with the delivery truck down the street, right, he looked at it, I praised him, he looked back at me because I used that yes or good as a signal for everything, which means I give him stuff. Mm. And so then I would reward him for looking at me. Now, after so much practice, when he sees a truck, he can look at me and make the choice to look at me instead, which also helps him to stay more relaxed. Mm. And that we can walk by in a very easy fashion.
Mm. I think that's actually the approach that the trainer I worked with here in Spain, when I first adopted my dog Rosa, because she was scared of other dogs. I'm not sure what kind of trauma she might have been through, if there were certain incidents where she was attacked by other dogs when, because she was a stray before she was found by the volunteers at the shelter. And as soon as I started to walk her and managed, because she was too scared to go out in the beginning, as soon as I did manage to get her out of the house, we walked past the dog and she just was not happy. And I thought, okay, so called a trainer, uses positive reinforcement. And it was like, just start with, when there's a dog in the area, like don't go close, you know, a dog walking past, far away, just praise her. She wasn't receptive to treats. She was just too nervous to have any food. Now she's a lot better and a lot more receptive to treats, but at the time she's just not interested in food at all. And it was just that very gradual exposure from afar and then praising her until we got to the point where she could sniff a dog, we'd just do it for a few seconds, praise, and then go away, and just slowly do a bit more of that. And now she loves playing with other dogs, and she's grown in terms of her confidence, and that if a dog is a bit too much and a bit insisting on playing and she doesn't want to, that she knows how to say no to the dog, which is also really good. So no, I've had experience with that approach and feel it works really, really well.
Yeah, and I just want to add on to something too, with dogs that have lived on the street, they've had wide open spaces to escape and avoid. Yeah. And now being on a leash, the dogs know that they don't have the freedom to move around. So that's also very scary. I've worked with a client who rescued a dog from Romania, a street dog from Romania, and her dog had more concern about people. So there's probably a lot of avoidance of people too. And so the same approach, just helping her dog know that when these things happen, good things happen to the dog with whatever it is that the dog enjoys in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a really interesting point. And I'd not thought of it that way, although I picked up on it with my dog Rosa. I've had her now 3 months and she's happy when she's outside and off leash. So when I take her to the woods and I can take her off the leash and she can just run around, she is a different dog. And one of the things that I'm always talking to my trainer about is like, okay, if there's something walking in the city, because we live in the city, and something freaks her out and she wants to run, I mean, there's nothing in my heart, it just would pain me to hold on to her. And so obviously I'm not going to let go of the leash, but I do tend to pick up the pace and go in the direction that she wants to, because I just feel she needs relief from that pain, as opposed to saying, no, stay, and yanking the leash. So no, it's good, because sometimes I think as a first time dog owner or dog adopter, you kind of question like, am I doing the right thing? Kind of feels like the right thing, but is it the right thing? And you don't want to be calling your trainer every day saying like, I'm doing this, is this? So it's always good to get that reinforcement as a dog parent as well.
Yeah. And with my clients too, I check in with them in between their training sessions, just to make sure that if they have questions, or to share their successes, or to help them troubleshoot. Because again, like a whole week or however span of time in between a person's training program, there's a lot that could happen. And so I try, because I know I wish I had someone like myself when I was helping out Jack, because I didn't know if I was doing the right thing. I went to school in order to know if I was doing the right thing. So yeah, I definitely understand how pet parents can feel a little like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think, and I don't think we talk about this enough, I think it can be really, really lonely. I found it really lonely in the beginning, which is like I was saying earlier, one of the reasons I started the podcast, because I reached out for help, and many, many people like yourself were kind enough to speak to me and share their knowledge and give me advice and so forth. But in the beginning, I was just like, oh my, like, I just feel like I'm in way over my head here. Yeah. Now in hindsight, I feel like, okay, now that I think the educating yourself piece is just so important, is reach out, ask for help. Hire a professional, is especially with rescues, but keen to understand more from your perspective and experience working with dogs, and specifically when they are showing any kind of I don't like to keep using the word aggressive behaviors because it's sensitivities towards certain things or people and so forth. What's the impact of using some of these aversive approaches that are so widespread? Because as you were saying earlier, sometimes it looks like it's working, but what's the impact on the maybe short term and the long term on the dog?
Well, I mean, I can speak from personal experience because before I knew better, I trusted someone that used and suggested that I use a pinch collar on my Jack Russell for the barking and the lunging. And so the tools like that, shock collars and all that, the main aim is for it to suppress behavior. Mm. So the dog is afraid, the dog avoids expressing natural behaviors, right? Mm-hmm. So not wanting to bark when they're feeling uncomfortable because they're afraid of the shock happening or the pinch of the collar. And from my experience with Jack, it made the problems worse because he was overly aroused. The pinch collar didn't do anything. It only added to him feeling that pain, feeling that fear. And then it was associated, like the fallout of these tools, it was associated with strangers now. So now I had him barking and lunging at strangers walking by. And that was the eye-opening piece. It's like, this is because of this tool. Like this wasn't happening before, but because I use this tool, I see the detrimental ramifications of what happens. And so that's when it was like, I need to be better. And I chose to become a dog trainer in order to teach him. That was my main goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was just to teach him. So, because again, like you, I didn't have the resources, like being in the Do No Harm group on Facebook, that wasn't a thing back in 2013, right? Or 2011 when I adopted Jack. So the whole mode of force-free training was probably, the waves are probably starting, but it wasn't this place now where people are already talking about the social emotional aspects of a dog, right? Linda Michaels, I don't remember when her Hierarchy of Dog Needs came out, but that me coping with Jack's emotional concerns was before then. So yeah, I mean, it's navigating these waters of old school thinking and trying to change the paradigm to have our pet parents understand what our dogs are feeling is huge. And it's a great wave to be riding.
And I completely agree with you. And I feel lucky that I very quickly got to know and be part of these groups early in my journey as a dog parent, and that's been incredibly helpful to understand that there is a lot of science now. And I would urge anyone listening to, you know, if you feel like the approach isn't working, if you're working with a trainer who's suggesting you hit your dog or you use any of these forceful approaches, just look at what the science has to say, because I think there's plenty of it now to suggest that they do have longer term ramifications. I think it's hard for people sometimes when these tools are so widely available, like when you can go buy a prong collar on Amazon or in the pet shop or whatever other tool, people don't realize that they could have harmful impacts and that they should be safe and appropriate tools to use with an animal, and kind of disregarding the emotional experience that the animal might be going through when you're using these sorts of tools on them.
Yeah, I know. And I think about, because I've had clients that when I meet with them for the first time, they either have their dog on a shock collar or prong collar. And after the time that we've worked together, they're no longer using them. And I've had clients tear up and say, I can't believe I now have a dog that is engaged with me. Like, this is what I've always wanted. And they express how the shock or the prong collar worked against them. Like, it wasn't something that built the relationship, but they also didn't understand at the time of how important it is to have a bond with our dogs. right? We want our dogs to, I hear it all the time, listen to us, right? But we have to first meet them halfway. Mm. My background is in social work. So I'm a very individual-minded person, right? So I'm looking at the perspective, the point of view of my client, mm. but now as a trainer, it's the client and the dog. And so helping them see the point of view of their dog and then shaping how we can help them build the relationship, because that's ultimately what is going to move the needle forward in helping their dog change their emotional responses to things, is seeing their dog, seeing them as their safe haven.
Yeah. And I think it's amazing to hear that you can have a client come see you and they've got prong or e-collars on their dog and they, you know, walk away with what they feel is a different dog. It's just the same dog. It just was given relief and a way to express how it feels and support to work through any of those challenges. But I mean, I don't know, I'm putting you on the spot bit here, but is there an example, like a client you could, without naming names or anything, just to share a story? Because I think stories are so impactful and I'm sure many listeners will probably relate. Maybe one of your clients, the kind of challenges that they came to you with and what the outcomes were.
Sure. So I recently finished up with a client who their dog was pulling on the lead. They had the dog on a choke collar, and with loose dogs or even smelling another dog by, their dog would pull, their dog has pinned other dogs down. They're really concerned about obviously their dog's behavior, and talking them about how to build the relationship, how to encourage engagement. I mean, they're like, I can't even believe it. Like, she is so much calmer. We couldn't have done it without you. We can now go outside of a dog park and she just kind of lays down and watches. They're like, I can't even believe that this is the same dog that we started with. And this dog has had 7-8 years of practicing these behaviors. Now they're able to walk calmly down the street. Yeah. And they have to find other alternatives to help her get her energy out, because her energy in the beginning was being pulled, right? Like, she was pulling everywhere.
Yeah.
So now they've expanded they have a little bit more freedom. They expanded their lifestyle. They're hired a forest-free dog walker so that their dog has exercise throughout the day. They're seeking out a forest-free pet sitter. So because of the way that they've learned how to teach their dog, they see that as the paradigm of how they're going to approach hiring other pet professionals.
That's amazing. That's a great story to hear, because I know so many people who have that as a challenge, that their dogs are kind of walking them. My dog used to walk me as well. she was a big puller. Still does sometimes when she's really excited about things. But no, I think that's amazing. And what do you think shifted from the dog's perspective?
I think seeking out her people. Like, that she saw that giving eye contact, giving attention to her people, and her people recognizing that that's the behavior that they want to encourage.
Yeah.
That built the connection, plus that builds the love, right, between the two of them. And so when her dog was feeling love and relaxed, that made the rest of the environment not that big of a deal.
What do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions people have about some of the topics that we're talking about, and specifically like force-free training approaches? And again, I keep going back to saying, if you have a very big, powerful dog, because a lot of people I will speak to be like, yeah, okay, that's fine with your little whatever breed. I've got a Podenco mix. She's a medium-sized dog. She weighs 20 kilos. If I did need to physically control her in an emergency situation, I physically could manage that. But if you have a 50-kilo dog that's quite powerful, would these approaches still work?
Yeah. I mean, I've worked with pit bulls that have taken off shock collars and prong collars. using these approaches, German Shepherds, Rottweilers. So I've had a lot of clients with powerful breeds that learned how to use force-free approaches, modern science in teaching their dogs what they want, right? I think a lot of times the whole thing that I hear is I want my dogs to stop doing X, Y, and Z. But instead, it's like shifting that perspective, like acknowledging of when our dogs are doing what we want them to do and reinforcing those times. Mm. I used to work with children and I used to work in an after-school program. And there's a positive guidance approach with kids. It's the same way, right? So addressing when the kids were doing things that you want to continue to reinforce, we have to acknowledge them rather than always harping on the things that the kids were not doing well, because that would just encourage them to continue those behaviors. Mm. Very similar. Learning theory is hand in glove with people and dogs. So it's the same kind of approaches. It's just done in a different way.
Yeah. And I completely agree with you. And I think it's really interesting, you know, you're saying earlier, I can't remember now if it was before we started recording or after we started recording, but that dog, you know, as the cognition of a toddler, and what would you expect from a toddler, and yeah, how would you interact with a toddler? And I think you were right earlier, Joy, about the expectations we have and in terms of how our dogs should behave.
Yeah.
And it feels like a lot of it comes down to us as dog parents. Like when you really start unpicking or peeling off the layers of this onion of behavior problems, that a lot of them are not really behavior problems. There are perceptions and expectations of how our dogs should behave. And then we just feel the need to interfere sometimes in ways that are just inappropriate and just amplify the problems further.
Yeah, I mean, I think people they're embarrassed, they're frustrated, they're sad, and they want their dogs to do something different because they're having an emotional response to what's going on. And I don't blame them, right? I understand that it could be very difficult and challenging when we have dogs that are living with us, but they have a hard time with the world outside. Mm. And coaching them and helping them build their confidence in turn helps to build a better relationship with their dog. Mm-hmm. And then together they're able to try new things. My clients, they all have come with the same idea at the end of our 6 weeks together, right? They have the tools that they need, and tools, I mean, modern science strategies like counter conditioning, plus they are more confident to be able to try these same skills in new situations and to expand their world, right? Like if they feel trapped, their dogs feel trapped, and then they're not living their best lives. And I want all my clients to live their best lives and just to help them see that there are things that are possible to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I love what you said about how we feel as dog parents sometimes embarrassed I'll share a funny story. My dog is obsessed with bakeries because she knows that's where bread comes from, and she is obsessed with bread. I don't like to give her bread because I don't think she should be eating bread. But anyway, so what she started doing is I'd take her for a walk and then she would just suddenly lie down outside a bakery. And I didn't make the connection in the beginning. It happened a few times. And the first two times it happened, I panicked and called my vet. I'm like, oh my God, I think my dog has some kind of heart condition. She's just lie down in the middle of the road. And I thought, let me go inside the bakery, get her some water, and I'll get her a little piece of bread, because if she gets up for the bread, it means she's okay. So of course, all I did was teach her that if you lie down in front of the bakery, I'm going to go get you some water and bread. And she would get up and I'd be like, oh, okay, good. She's fine. Good. Nothing's wrong with it. And my vet must think I'm absolutely bananas. Because I'm a first time dog owner. Anything that doesn't seem quote unquote normal to me, I panic and call my vet. Better be safe than sorry. And yeah. the vet reassured me and everything. And this kept happening over the course of a week. And I call my husband, you know, and it happened like the fourth time or fifth time. And I'm like, I'm around the corner. I'm outside the bakery. Rosa's lying down again. I have to take the vet now. He's like, where are you again? I'm like, I'm outside the bakery on the corner. And he's like, and where were you the last time this happened? I'm like, outside the and he's like, you're not connecting the dots here. I'm like, oh. So now she still does it. So she does it when I take her for a walk to the park, and I leave her off leash in the park, and then it's time to go home and she's not ready to come home. She'll just lie down. Now, if there's lots of people around, if I'm completely honest, sometimes I'm like, okay, my dog showed me out, but I look like a complete idiot. But the one rule I have is I never, ever pull her. The only time I will ever use any kind of pulling or is if there was an emergency, she was going to get hit by a car and I had to pull her out of the situation. And she just sat on my wall trying to convince her to come home with me. And it took quite a bit convincing, but people were looking at me like, woman, take control of your dog. I'm like, well, I'm not going to yank her, but she just needs to realize that you can lie there all you want, but we're not going back to the park because I need to get home. And now she'll try it and then she'll look at me and I'll just be like, nope. And she'll just get up and come home with me. And and I share that story because I understand, like, as a dog owner, if your dog is pulling you down the road, my dog used to pull me down the road, people would be staring, like, and I get my friends and even family be like, your dog's walking you. I'm like, yeah, we're working on it. It's going to take time. Now she walks beautifully on the leash. So it's okay sometimes to feel judged, but control is just it just feels like the wrong way to think about our relationships with our dogs. Like, it's about understanding, I understand she wants to go back to the park and play because that's fun for her. And I need her to understand that I need to get home and do my work. She might not cognitively process that, but to understand that we can't go back now, honey. Maybe we'll go back later. So yeah, just wanted to share.
Yeah. I think a lot of people can feel that, right? Like, they are feeling like they're judged by others, and it could be really hard. It could be really hard on someone that's already experiencing a lot of emotional distress because of what's going on with their dog. And then to have close family or friends make those judgments when it's like, that's not supportive. Yeah. That's not helping out your friends, your loved one, by making these judgment calls. So.
Yeah. I do think though, it's the judgment comes from, again, just the perception that we should dominate our dogs. That's where it comes from. I was like, no, you should be the boss of your dog. Like, well, it's the same with if I had a child, I don't think I'd want the child to listen to me because it was scared of me. I think I'd want my child to listen to me because they love me and they respect me and that we have that relationship and we can negotiate things.
Yeah. But but again, I think it's like the culture, the punitive legal culture that, at least in the United States that we live in, like, these are the consequences for not making the right choice. So you pay a fine, go to jail. Right. And so, but is that really changing that person's behavior? Even positive guidance with children, that's new, right? Like, the same approaches of to be seen but not heard was the way that parents back 30, 40 years ago, that's kind of the mode of parenting. And so now shifting it to seeing what our kids are doing and what they're doing well and acknowledging those things, that's a shift in perspective. So I think in the same way, shifting our perspective on understanding our dog's social emotional needs, it's a new thing. It's a new perspective and it's a new way of being with our dogs. Mm. So I think it's going to take time for people to kind of follow along and really understand what that really means and to really feel it in their heart of what it means to be having a relationship with their dog.
Yeah. And I think you said that beautifully. And I suppose my follow-on question to you on that note is, how do you tune in to your dog's emotional experience? How do you do that on a practical level?
Yeah, and I've been thinking about it. I think I, from my, in with Jack, seeing him as a separate being and empathizing with him helped to lower my expectations of what he's capable of in that moment. So having compassion for him and knowing that he's having a hard time, he's not doing these things out of spite or out of any other like human assumption. Yeah, I think just really seeing Jack for being him and to help him. And that was my goal.
Yeah, no, I love that. And you've said several times in our conversation when the dog's having a hard time. And I think that's really interesting. I was interviewing Emma McLean from Hound Charming and she, and someone else also said the dog's not giving you a hard time, it's having a hard time. And I love that statement because I'm like, it's just a complete shift in how we think about what they're going through and why they behave the way they behave, rather than, oh, my dog's showing me up or embarrassing me or doing something in spite of me or whatever. I think that's just such an important way to think about what they're experiencing and recognizing that they go through a hard time.
Yes. Yes, they totally do. Especially when dogs don't have control over their environment. And so when things happen that are surprising to them, that could be really derailing for them. Especially I have a client where she brought in two new rescues and getting used to being in the home and being a little bit more settled, but then seeing or hearing construction going on next door, that really flipped the script on them. And they started having a harder time again. And it's understandable. And talking with my clients about how these experiences, these sudden changes can really feel really scary to her dogs. And so helping them to understand that helped them to see how to set up their environment a little bit differently so that their dogs can feel safe.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a really important point you touched on, is that it's ongoing, right? It's just because they've overcome one or are able to cope with one thing that scares them, it doesn't mean that there will be other things that won't crop up in the future. And often it's unexpected. My dog now is really scared of the trucks that come collect the big rubbish bins, trash cans. They just really freak her out. And today, for the first time, she freaked out when she saw, what do you call them, a double-decker red bus with the open tops, like the tourist tour buses.
Yeah,
I think it was the first time she'd ever seen one. And she was just like, what is that? She just freaked out and wanted to go down a side street. So I'm like, okay, we'll take the route home. Yeah, so it's still seeing new things that tend to scare her. But I guess back to your point, it's about paying attention and noticing what those things are and responding accordingly.
Yes, and anticipating that new things are going to be scary. Like my other dog, Bernie, he was very fearful. He would hide under the bed. He was nervous about my husband. Now they're best friends. But even those inflatable holiday decorations, like those, he's not sure, right? And so we take our time, I encourage him, and then he feels comfortable and then he's confident to be able to and explore them.
Yeah.
But initially they were terrifying because they're huge. They moved randomly. They even popped out of like presents or chimneys, right? And so that's scary. They're not anticipating these changes and what this is all doing because they have no experience of what this means to them.
Yeah. Is Bernie a rescue or have you had him since he's a puppy?
No, he was, both of them I got when they were a year and a half old. Bernie was in a shelter and we found him at a rescue that we were volunteering at.
What advice would you give to someone who's either thinking about adopting a rescue dog or recently have adopted a rescue dog and they might be struggling to get it settled because it might be really, really scared as they tend to be in the beginning? What advice would you give to someone in that situation?
Give their dog space, make the experiences with you pleasant, understand that they're having a hard time adjusting and they're not doing things like Bernie. We didn't know his signals that he needed to go to the bathroom because he had access to a doggy door at the foster family. So he could go and come in whenever he wanted. And when he came to us, we lived in an apartment and he didn't know where to go. We didn't know his signals. So he would have accents all the time.
Yeah.
And so I was frustrated but then I understood, if he had access to the outside, he doesn't have that kind of freedom. Yeah. So how can we help him adjust to a new routine? And so taking him out every hour, then we learned him staring at us was his signal, I gotta go. So understanding, like learning, observing our dogs, learning what they're doing, seeing what they enjoy doing, even with the clients I work with, asking them questions like, does your dog enjoy ripping things up? Does your dog enjoy looking for things? So adding those things that their dogs are wanting to do can really add in that bonding opportunity, which can then help their new dogs feel safe too.
Yeah. I love that example, because I think like the toilet training can be a big frustration for people, especially when they adopt an adult dog and they just expect it will be toilet training. So actually, no, because it's a whole new environment and you need to teach it again where to go. And I love how Bernie's signal is to stare at you.
Totally. Yeah, it took us a while to figure that out. And we're like, this is how he gets our attention.
Yeah, that is really interesting, because I've noticed this with Rosa, my dog. Her signal is, in the morning I take her out as early as I possibly can, because I always just think it must be so uncomfortable if you're desperate to go and you just have to hold it in. So I'm like, I don't want to do her, right? But what she'll do is, if I'm trying, can I just have a coffee so I can wake up, she will lie down on the floor, but her whole chin rests on the floor, and then she'll do a kind of noise, like, not already, I have to go. And she also has a I need to pee walk, where her head goes really low, her ears don't go, they go flat and sideways as opposed to backwards, and she definitely pulls. And then I'm like, okay, she needs to go, let's hurry up. So no, I think that's a great example to share, because I can imagine that's one of the big frustrations for many, many, particularly first-time adopters, is toilet training. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's a big one.
Catherine, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. This has been really great talking to you.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Before we go, just tell our listeners where they can find out more about you and your dog training services.
Oh, great. Thank you. Yeah. So I'm on Facebook, Four Paws and You Dog Training LLC. And that's four as in the number four. And then also my website is www.fourpawsandyoudogtraining.com. So I'm also on Instagram, and I think that's it. So yeah, those are the spots.
Super. I will link to all of those in the show notes as well. Thanks again so much for joining me today, Catherine.
Thank you for having me.